Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters, and maybe a Twisted Mister or two. Yes. And I want to thank everyone for sharing that Midsummer's Night dream with all of us. What a fun prompt. It turned out to be a great contest. So many wonderful writes, and people participating, and yes, I was happy. And I have all of you to thank for that. Hi, Pam. Hey, Naomi. How are you both?
Hello. Good.
Hello. Doing great. How are you?
Good. Very good. Very good.
Awesome stuff.
What's happened, ladies?
Hi, Naomi.
What's happening?
Hi.
What's happening,
oh. Pam?
Oh, let's
turn up the volume.
Same old, same old. Well, actually, I had an extremely busy day today. It involved a lot of being in a car, a lot of going different places. I spent 8 hours away from home. And
wow.
The introvert part of me is ready to hide.
God help.
But I'm looking forward to tonight's show. What a wonderful lineup of poetry.
Honest to God, I was so tickled by the lineup of poetry for tonight. I really, really was. Just so many great poets. And, you know, I loved the prompts that you found, the quotes. And I love the art that I found. And I thought that it was really, they went well together. It gave people different directions to look at and think about. That intro, it was so, you know, I got to tell the truth. I am not like the sharpest tool in the shed. You know, you're not going to find me in, any elite social group, I guess. But when I went looking for music for tonight, it was so funny. Because I guess, you know, Midsummer Night Dream was done as a ballet at some point. And I'm looking, and I'm looking for music, and I'm like, oh, what the heck am I going to grab for this? And I thought, well, I'll just find something classical, maybe. Well, then I found all the works by Mendelssohn that went with the ballet, I assume, or the ballet went with them. I'm not sure which came first, the chicken or the egg. Like I say, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. But I said, okay, let me hear this one. And I clicked on it, and it was so funny because it was the Wedding March. And I said, there's just no way in hell I'm starting to show off with the Wedding March. I had no idea that that was... It was actually part of the ballet, and I went, oh, no. So, but I can't tell you how many times I clicked on one of the YouTubes and kept finding the Wedding March. I'm like, oh, my God, you know. I said, I do that, everybody's going to drop a net over me, you know. It's supposed to be sensual, not like people.
Everybody would have been wondering who was getting married.
Honestly, God. Well, I'm going to do that someday. Don't you worry. I have the L&P wedding chapel in the back of my mind. And the people that are to that know all about it. They all know that I have that in the back of my mind. Someday it will happen. It will.
Phil's gonna just playing Cupid.
No, that part's already over with me. I'm going to officiate. See, I'm going to pretend like I can. Oh, that's so funny. But yes. Anyway, it was. It was a lot of fun. And as I put in the room, that was a piece by Mendelssohn, the Midsummer's Night Scherzo. I think it's S-C-H-E-R-Z-O. I have no idea past that. Okay. I went and pulled up my upload, and that's what it said. So I know no more than that right now. But anyway. How much fun. There's three of us are here. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I think male voice coming, so that'll be wonderful. And we have some good audios. I think we have one, two, three, well, we only have four, five. We have five. That's not bad. I like it. So
I just love that you the theme you put up brought me back to my high school days.
Yeah.
We actually had that play up, you know, and it is a crazy play, you know. It's so funny, you know, the falling in love with one and the falling in love with the other, and just a crazy comedy.
I have to say that I've had this idea in the back of my mind for probably at least a year. Because I talked to Pam about it, and I had talked to Mindy about it, and I'm like, I really want to do it, right? But when I, I'm so discriminating. I went out to look for artwork, and I was determined that I wanted pretty artwork. And, you know, it's great because some of the things you find are sketched. They look like they're sketched. Some of the things look like they're done in watercolors. Some things look a little heavier. You know, I don't know. I just, and I'm looking at them like I couldn't come up with enough of them of the style I wanted. So I just sat them in a folder, and I said, I'll get back to it. So I guess it was a week or so ago, I said to Pam, I said, I think I'm going to do that. So I went hunting, and I said, you want to look up some quotes? And she said, sure. So she went and hunted up quotes, and I went and hunted up enough pictures to get through. Actually, I have two folders, pictures I liked and pictures I wasn't crazy about. And I figured if I had a crossover, I was going to. But I thought, what a great, you know, kind of an idea. And, you know, it's not the longest story in the world. And I did put the link to the story, to the play itself, in the contest. So that way, if anybody wasn't sure, they could kind of click on it and kind of check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Whether anybody even noticed it or not, I don't know. But
yeah, well, I did. I had to click on it and reread a bit and go through the summaries because, hey, boy, it was in high school. And, you know, I remembered part of it, you know, the laughter and the funny part of it, but who was who and who did who, you know, who did what, you know. I wasn't too sure, you know, it was a long time ago. But, I had to do my research.
I'll tell you, I remember A Midsummer's Night Dream, honest to heavens, the only time I ever read it, well, not the only time, the only times I ever read it, I was in my early teens. I wasn't even in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But somewhere I had acquired a small hardback book of Shakespeare, right? And in it, it had A Midsummer's Night Dream, and it had, like, I don't know, maybe a dozen little stories or plays. There were nothing, like, there was at least a dozen, but it was not a big book. And in it, at the beginning of each one, there was a small illustration. And I went, okay. And I fell in love with the book when I was a kid. I did. I just fell in love with it. And now I can't even put my hands on it. I don't know where it ever wandered off to in this house, but it's probably here somewhere, in some corner someplace, or some even the attic or something. But stuck with me because I just thought, I loved the artwork, and I remember I liked the story, but I would have to sit and reread the whole thing in order to refresh my brain because it's so long ago. Because I'm lucky I can remember breakfast. It was only this morning. But it was definitely something that I thought would be neat. And after I saw the turnout on it, I was pleased that, you know, I kind of picked it. Everybody was wonderful on it. So, you know, maybe they just needed a touch of Shakespeare to play with.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, every now and then we all have to kind of go back to something, you know, familiar or that we relate to in a different way. You know, it can't all be like fun in the sun stuff. But anyway, Pam, what are you doing? Why are you so quiet, you know? You sound good on the phone tonight. Now you're all quiet. I know you're saying you can't get a word in edgewise. I get it. Don't you be fresh now. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess I have to go find some way to do this poetry, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okie dokie. Let's see. We're all girls. So,
yep.
Let me see what. Well, at least I'm pretty sure we all are. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put up a link to one of the men's pieces that has an audio. We'll start out with a male voice, and then we'll kick out three girls, and, you know, so on and so forth. We'll try and stretch it out so it works. Okay, so here we go. Pam, I'm going to put up the piece by S. Sharp called Blow Me Away.
All right. Is it up?
Yes, ma'am.
It is? After it.
Let's set it somewhere else.
Blow me away. Do you feed me sorrow with a spoon? Like mush that I cannot chew? Have not I survived the harsh winters of your scorn, thrown like daggers in the cold winds that slap my face with open hand, only to step to other side when I turn mine cheek? I say no, feed me thy meal of spite on your paper plates in a downpour of hatred, and let your cold winds blow me away, away, away.
Nice job. Nice job, that's sharp. Yeah, do you want to start us off, Naomi?
No, first of all, I really loved his voice throughout this. This is amazing. And, you know, the way he took the wind here, the harsh winter of your scorn thrown like daggers in the cold winds that slap my face with open hand. I just love this all through especially his SoundCloud, which was amazing. I can't really say what part of this it's kind of familiar with me, like it goes with the tone of Shakespeare,
exactly.
The fight going on between the two of the characters there. Would it be the fairies, the fairy king and his queen, maybe? Kind of familiar there with the fighting. It makes me think of it. They're arguing there. But this is just amazing all through. This is just delightful.
Right.
Good job, that's sharp.
And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like this. I really like the way he read it with that dramatic flair.
Mm-hmm.
And, I like how he opens it up with, do you feed me sorrow with a spoon like mush that I cannot chew? And to me, that really strikes on the idea of, do you treat me like a child, or do you think me a child? You know, do you think I cannot think as an adult? I say, no, feed me thy meal of spite on your paper plate. That's kind of, to me, a really clever combination of putting in that Shakespearean touch by putting thy meal, but then bringing up a modern element like paper plate. I thought that worked really well for this particular poem, and I enjoyed the ride very much.
Right. Good comments, guys. I really like this as well. I don't think that, I mean, I think maybe he may have pulled an element from that story that story, Midsummer Night's Dream. Oh my God. But I think this was just more of a tribute piece to Shakespeare. The topic of the poem itself kind of lines up with a few things of Shakespeare, but I think the way that he read it and the way that he wrote it really does like point to Shakespeare. It's like the tip of the hat, like, yep, this is what I have in mind. I think his audio really did line up with the Shakespeare kind of idea. But I found it funny because I like this second stanza very much, but I find this funny. Do you feed me sorrow with a spoon like mush that I cannot chew? I say no, feed me thy meal of spite on your paper plates in a downpour of hatred, and let your cold winds blow me away. You just leave out that second stanza, and it just totally pulls together, you know? The middle one just really like gives it a little more definition and direction. But he definitely didn't miss a beat between the beginning and the end of this, and I think he did it very well. So great job there, S. Sharp, and thanks for writing for the contest. Much appreciate that. Very much. Let me see now. And Jean, would you throw up the next poem, please?
Sure, I can do that.
Don't mind me. Oh, my God. Wait till I start talking to you, and it'll all be over with. Okay. Hopefully I got this one, and I'll do it right. Copy. And Naomi, can I have you read this one?
Yeah.
Like room.
Is it in now?
It is now.
It is in now. Yeah, okay. I just saw it. Okay. By Ratul Banerjee. Oh, it's the first time I saw her. Now and forever. The dream awakening on a midsummer nightfall, gently, softly tiptoeing past the lacuna of time and spaces, landing in the enigmatic forest of far, far away. Still even in the dreams, it's a dark moonlit night there, and a strange congregation of fairies and winged creatures or humanoids and that throng there, lurking in the cover of trees or crevices, perhaps the auspicious hour as merrily be. They're singing amongst themselves in wondrous, a beautiful song about the mysteries of the woods that resonates past the depths of the forest and the leaves borne away from trees falling, shimmering effect in the moon-washed light. How long less the drift of seconds and amplifying the spatial redundancy, less just a dream. It could have lingered or stayed for a more temporal drift, but all that is beautiful is meant to be inherently a short-lived fantasy. As once again the reverie will break, still the persistence of a beautiful memory in midsummer night's dream, now and forever. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. That's really good. Pam, you want to start us off on this one?
Absolutely. That was a beautiful read, Naomi. I really thought this was just absolutely stunning. I like how the main message is the idea that the beauty of dreams, anything beautiful is temporary, that dreams drift away, you know. And let's see here. I'm trying to pick out a favorite part. I like perhaps the auspicious hours merrily be. They're singing amongst themselves in wondrous, a beautiful song about the mysteries of the woods. I really feel like that brings in the whole magical element of the fairies and dancing and the mythology of it all. And, you know, there's just something very festive within that imagery. And then I think there's kind of a hauntingness that as it drifts towards the end and the memories of what once was. So beautifully written and very well done.
Nice, Pam. Nice. Okay, Naomi, do you want to go next? Do you want me to go next?
Whatever.
I can go? Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I loved how I just went back and checked that prompt, and what a beautiful... beautiful art piece that is, by the way. And you know, great choice. And you know, she just brought that out. I just love, you know, the still even in the dreams, 'tis a dark moonlit night there, and a strange congregation of fairies and winged creature or humanoids, the throng here, lurking in the cover of trees or crevices, you know, like they're all over the place here. And, you know, I just love how she opens it up to the dream awakening on a midsummer nightfall, gently, softly, tiptoeing past the lacuna of time and spaces, you know, landing in the enigmatic forest of far, far away. You know, she has the far, far away in there. And then she ends it with now and forever. And it's like Pam just said, it brings in like that, the dreamy, you know, the dreamy effect of the whole rite, which is just so beautiful and very, it mirrors very well, you know, all that the Shakespeare, what Midsummer Night's Dream is, you know, yeah, just the whole atmosphere. I think she captured it so beautifully in this rite.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comments, you two. I thought this was a wonderful rite, and I think she really, truly captured the visions from the tale, from Midsummer Night's Dream. And, you know, I thought she had great imagery, and it was so very well expressed. I love these lines here. Still, even in the dreams, it's a dark moonlit night there, and a strange congregation of fairies and winged creatures, or humanoids, that throng here, lurking in the cover of trees or crevices. Perhaps the auspicious hour as merrily be. They're singing amongst themselves in wondrous, a beautiful song about the mysteries of the woods. I thought that right there just captured what I would envision. Now, I did not, you know, here it says prompt three. I was like, where did she get the prompt number from? Yes, yes, yes. But I think that it really was a very well done piece, very well put together. Absolutely. I'm going to look up prompt three so you all just kind of shake your head at me. Oh, there you go. Oh, I like it. I like it. I like it. Okay, I'm getting out of there now. I'm going to go back and behave myself. Oh, God. Like I know how. Yeah, I finally get back to there. We go. I finally got there. I'll be good now. Okay, Pam, honey, I have one for you to read. I know I'm a pain in the neck, but, you know, that's what happens. I get to be last in the barrel. Okay, here we go. By Diane D. It is called Enchanted.
Oh, we don't have a SoundCloud, huh? Ah.
No.
All right.
Oh.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
I guess you figured we can handle it.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. Enchanted by Diane D. And it goes like this. Where those flower fairies flutter in their glittering butterfly wings, the wood is mysterious, magical, thou would be permitted to enter. Nymphs dance a star's symphony, enchanted unicorns on rainbows, pepper the skies in pink clouds, midst flit in the air with the fat bees. Mushrooms are purple, elves blue, spotted toads grant three wishes. Should a fair maiden give a kiss in the singing vine, antelope hide. On milky moonlit nights, troll flies suck the twilight chill petal teas from the pastel fertile dandelions. Thou hast sent a seeming curse where antelope walk like humans, spritzing the air with a lilac scent, luring the humming flower fairies into the thistle under their spell. Once entranced, helpless maidens become infatuated with the wise antelope whose crooning wisdom leads his fairy bride down the aisle. End poem. Are we having a moment of silence?
Hi!
Drop?
The sound of silence. I was singing. No, I'm only kidding. I'm lying. I was not singing. Tell me, would you like to start us off? So I have to quick read it.
Did you say me?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This makes me think of the, you know, when the one of the characters in the play Puck, he plays a prank on another one called The Bottom there, and in the fairy world, in the woods itself, which she describes so amazingly. and you know, and then to Tiana, another character in the play, she falls in love with this you know, this kind of strange creature there, and she praises his beauty. It's like a man with a kind of like a head of a horse or a, something from my memory there. She has a kind of anyway, this strange creature, and yeah, she falls in love with it because of the potion. I see that in the last stanza there. Once enthralled, helpless maiden becomes infatuated with the wise antelope whose croning wisdom leads his fairy bride down the aisle. I see that the fun in that. Echoed in that. I don't know if that was their intention or not, but I mean, this all throughout, wow, you know, Diane put so much wonderful imagery throughout this. She just that you know, all the woods and all that forest, and she just brought it to life there. I can't pull out one part of imagery in this because it's so well weaved together. It's just like beautiful, you know, all the way through. Just a wonderful, so beautifully crafted piece here. And it's truly like her title there. She called it Enchanted, but this is truly an enchanting piece, you know. From top to bottom. Well done, Diane.
Absolutely. Okay. And Pam, do you want me to go next or do you want to go? You ready? Either way is fine.
Well, if you're going to give me the option, I want you to go next.
Okay. That's fine by me. I can see all the work from you then. Pam doesn't always judge what I'm going to say. Not always, but she's much more articulate. But this was a wonderful piece, Diane. I really enjoyed it. I think that your imagery was fabulous. And the scene, I can almost envision a scene from maybe one of my prompts or something I've seen in the past. You know, the scene was just so well described. A beautiful, beautiful picture. And I think I just very much enjoyed the piece altogether. And, yeah, and Pam did a great job reading it. Absolutely. You're up, Pam.
All right. Well, as always, Diane has created a rite that has a stunning use of imagery. I really like how there's so much to just take in and enjoy. I like how this comes across as kind of like a tribute to the original story with certain elements like the fairies and the fair maiden that you can see as being part of the original story. But I like that she adds her own little touches that makes it uniquely hers. Like with the original story, I believe, if I remember right, the guy had the head of a donkey or ass. And here she goes with the head of, what did she go with? I forget. Antelope. The head of an antelope. Yes, and yeah. So that was a really nice touch. Also, I felt with some of her imagery, like the mushrooms are purple. You know, there was something about her choice of imagery, like the purple mushrooms and elves in blue and fat bees and nitlet, those kind of wording that felt like a combination between Alice in Wonderland and A Midsummer's Night Dream. And absolutely. I particularly like that blending. So very well done here, Diane.
Absolutely. Just, I don't know, it was just great, I thought, you know, very, very nicely her own. Okay, Eugene, can you come? Okay, here we go. Okay, I'm going to put up the next piece, and I'm going to go ahead and read it. since it's my turn in the barrel. We all know how I am. And this is called I Am the Wanderer by Passion's Promise. I am the wanderer this year night who bears armor and light of 12 men. We seek the comfort of peace and good sight. So through darkness we search for a hidden gem. Over mushrooms and through the trees we are tied, searching high and low for the elf that holds the mysterious gem others denied. Oh, how the journey we have traveled unfolds. Fairies laugh at the groups of men snoring. Butterflies tied their shoestrings together. Through the brush, the lioness were luring, smirking elves through the upcoming weather. While the others slept, I snuck up on the elf, and round his little neck, I found my wealth. End poem. Nice, nice. Okay, Pam, I'll get you to start this one off.
All right. I thought this was absolutely beautiful. I like the way she, the lines kind of flow, and yet they're written in one like block, but it doesn't look like a block. It's got a bit of a shaping to it. Also, a wonderful rhyme here. I really enjoyed it. I like how she told us a tale with only a few short lines. It kind of, I'm guessing it's a, it looks like the rhyming pattern of close to a sonnet or similar to a sonnet. It might actually. I really like the delightfulness of fairies laughed at the group of men snoring, butterflies tied their shoestrings together. Through the brush, the lioness were luring, smirking elves to the upcoming weather. I really feel like she's done a wonderful job of capturing the sense of humor that Shakespeare conveyed in so many of his plays and rites. So I thought this was very well done.
Nice job. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Pam. She did capture that fun there, you know. And I just love the flow of this. You know, she starts out, I am the wanderer of this here night. And, you know, and it goes, you know, and where's the other line there? Searching high and low. And, you know, through the trees we'd hide and through darkness we search. And then, you know, she just, it goes on. It goes away. It's has this kind of flow of a wanderer, a dreamer, you know, a player of tricks throughout this rite, which I find was amazingly well crafted here. Just a wonderful little brevity here by Passions that she packed in so much into these so few lines here. Really, she told the story. Just amazing.
Yeah, I have to agree with both of you. I thought it was a great rite. I thought it was very well written and nice rhyme and meter. You know, I thought it was a fun tale told. I have to say, I agree with you, Pam. I think there's 14 lines to this. There's three quatrains and then the couplet at the end. And I think when I was trying to justify that one the other night, I think when I looked, I think I remember seeing 14 and 2. It just wasn't split out, you know, like you know, you kind of see in a sonnet. Well, maybe you don't always see it in a sonnet. I don't know. But anyway, I think you're right on that. I think you were onto something. But it was definitely a nice piece and well done. And I think that it carried through with the story as well. So just nice job. Very much enjoyed that one, Passions, and thanks for sharing. Woo-hoo, that brings me back to a fellow's piece. Okay, let's see now. Nope. Yes. I think I have one. Boy, let me see. Why? Yes, I do. Okay. This one is called Upon a Seamless Midsummer's Night by Erik Svensson. And let me hit the button. Here we go.
Upon a Seamless Midsummer's Night. Once prodded by penumbra's lunar allure, girded by silken zephyr whisperings, I undertook a pilgrimage to Sherwood's fecund naval knell, wary of worldly affairs of men, stricken by raven's callous commerce core, midsummer's night led a savant away from doom's gloomy gnaw. Firefly lanterns led the zigzags way, deep into darkness to quicken sensory perception. Gentle owls guided, encourage esoteric inclinations. Forest naval knell reached before the midnight hour. Soft green moss cushioned a wide-eyed, yet wary wanderer, who relieved, lay himself down beneath ancient oak's gnarled limbs. Silken silence saturated cognition, spun its silken cocoon. Gossamer fairy wings fluttered close by, gently shooed away thoughts of merrymaking and festivities. Some would say I chose initiation into sorcery that midsummer's night. Others hinted metaphysical meanderings of the occult. Even Faustian pacts were cruelly thrown in. I, acclaimed bard, just needed rest from the taxing globe theater. Pragmatics of Idramedy, a light-hearted comedy, was what my audience needed. Fertile forest navel would spin silver-threaded inspiration that night. Renew a mind loom overworked by spinning tales of valor in a disillusioned world. Such wondrous visions upon silken moss navel were bequeathed unto me that night. Little, light-hearted entities came a merry-making with quirky quasars. Flutter of dainty doe eyes stripped me of all third-dimensional resistance. O lend me thine ears, gentle folk of beleaguered centuries later, steel, concrete and glass citadels imprison you. Exploration into space shall be ill-fated, for you deny your divine inner space. By thy greed, thee and thou have vanquished Gaia's fecund, fertile womb. Until princes, priests, and paupers embrace universal love that looks not with the eyes but with the mind, warmongering kinds will be bound by karmic oath to repair their wrongdoing. End poems.
Nice job, Eric. Okay, Naomi, I'm going to have you start us off on this one.
Yeah, well, I love this throughout. I mean, I love the forest naval nail reached before midnight, the midnight hour, soft green moss cushioned a wide-eyed yet weary wanderer who relieved lay himself down beneath ancient oaks, gnarled limbs. I loved the imagery throughout, and especially in that stanza there. but all throughout, like the fertile forest navel would spin silver threaded inspiration that night. I love also his message in the last stanza, you know, about universal love. And one of the themes of the Midsummer's Night Dream, it's that love never runs smoothly, and love is always, you know, like a force of chaos. So I think he touched on that, and, you know, and the message he gives, you know, but until princes, priests, and popers embrace universal love that looks not with the eyes but with the mind, you know, you'll never repair their wrongdoings. That's a powerful message that he leaves us, the reader, with there to ponder over. So just a well-written piece throughout, and with an amazing message at the end. So well done, Eric. I love this piece.
Thanks for coming, Naomi. And welcome aboard, Rex. Just saying. Okay, I must be on mute. No, I'm not. I'm not on mute.
No, you're not on mute. Maybe Rex is on mute.
Maybe he
Rex. Hi, Rex.
Hi, Good Rex. Evening.
Good evening. Well, that's a wonderful male voice to read Shakespearean poems.
Oh, just you wait. It is quarter of 11.
I heard you're a little short of testosterone, so I thought I'd drive by.
He gets to read all the rest of them. We get to sit back and just comment. You know what? We got to halfway there, Rex. The rest is on you. Sorry. I should be able to talk.
Oh. Well, I guess I'll be busy, won't I?
Yes, you will. Pam, do you want to comment next?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. You know, I really like how oftentimes in his write, and I find this one no exception, that Eric combines what seems to be elements of himself and then a tribute to the author. Like, I really see within this a tribute to Shakespeare, especially with the mention of I, acclaimed bard, just needed rest from taxing globe theater. But with the beginning part, once prodded by Penundra's lunar allure, goaded by Miss Silken Zephyr whisperings, I undertook a pilgrimage to Sherwood's found naval now or fecund. You know, and I realized that could also be a tribute to Shakespeare, but part of me feels like that it's a tribute, not necessarily a tribute, because I don't think you make a tribute to yourself. I feel like it speaks on what the desire to travel and learn that I get from Eric, from his poetry. I also like that he goes, pragmatics of a dramedy, a lighthearted comedy, was what my audience needed. Fertile forest navel would spin silver-threaded inspiration that night. I think for any artist, you know, it's you have to be true to yourself, but you also have to look at what are the people asking for. And then I like that he brings it near the end into modern times, you know, not only modern times, but throughout history, warmongering kinds will be bound by karmic oath to repair their wrongdoings. And, you know, I like that because I think a line like that works well for nowadays. I think it works well for Shakespearean days and every day before and after. So mm-hmm. I just think this is a wonderful write and very well done.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I thought this was a fabulous write. It was great imagery and alliteration that Eric is so so good at doing. But, you know, usually I say, like, you know, great picture painted or whatever, but I thought this was a wonderful panoramic view of the picture he painted because there's so much there, and there's always a lot in Eric's work. So panoramic is pretty much the way I view it as I'm reading. Pretty amazing stuff. So wonderful job, Eric. Now, Rex, did you happen to hear that piece?
Yeah. I look at it as the backdrop to what birthed a Midsummer Night's Dream to begin with. He offers up that first stanza. You got nice language, the penumbra, the zephyr, and then Sherwood, second naval now, nice, fertile, would be that thought of Sherwood itself. And then you hit on the weary of worldly affairs of men, Midsummer's night, let a savant away from dunes, gloomy nor. I like that back-to-back, the commerce, core, the hawking and shilling, and then the dunes, gloomy nor, that which niggles at the mind. And then you get that little influx, firefly lanterns, let the zigzag sway, deeper into the darkness to quicken sensory perception, gentle owls guided, encouraged esoteric inclinations. The mind is already at work. It feels a little better. So it's walking its way through the evening. And then he hits on all these little notes, spun its silken cocoon, oak's gnarled limbs, gossamer fairy wings flutter close by. Then the dream begins, and he brings it all to life. And then he hits on the note, I, a clean bar, just need rest from the taxing globe theater. So it does offer up that note of thought of, hey, you know what? Even with all of this, it ain't easy doing it, and you just got to get away. That's where he brings it forth with the back end of this as an offering of not just promise, but taking a look back to that which once was. And maybe you should be listening to me once more as I impart the little truth.
Nice comment, Lex. Okay. I think I got unconfused. Nice comments, everybody. And Rex, I'm going to put this next one up for you, but you already knew that was coming.
Okay. All right. I got it.
Things that appear. We, the fool, by Tomahawk. Durst not I presume the obvious human flaws, far be it from I question motive nor deed. But aren't we just slaves to our own night day? Dare we to assume beyond our own limits that we can champion whatever we attempt without a thought that we may be in error? O Lord, be this simply madness incarnate that runneth we blindly helpless shelter foolishly in search of a love dear that fulfills our desires, only to find was never our boon in reality. And yet we sally forth on blind speed, riding nowhere, this heartache and travail that drives us to folly. Does this exercise of stark futility ever cupid teach us any? Or shall this base-born fool in us all dare forever thus? Love is the most arcane of emotions, and aren't we simply puppets in some madman's game? I must confess, these are the times that try our souls, though of course we, regardless of disappointment, ere long. I, Puck, remain at sixes and sevens in this matter of heart, far be it from I to discern the human condition. In sooth, as it was ever thus, I go on in this comedy of errors, a humble spectator in the ways of mortal intrepidity. Maybe one fine day they will awaken from their naivete and carry on in a manner best befitting their lot in life. I hold it not my breath. Lord, what fools these mortals be. And gone.
Great read, Rex. Really well done. Naomi, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, well, he took he really dived into Shakespeare, Tomahawk. We see that he knows his Shakespeare here and his Midsummer's Night Dream. I mean, he took the character Puck, which is the one that bewitched? Oh yeah, bewitched. Kind of put the powder in the eyes of all the humans, you know, to see just how crazily they act when they fall in love with this one and that one and everyone's mixed up. And he just has a fun time with it all, you know. And, yeah, he just laughs at, you know, the humans, I think, here. And he brings out an important message in this throughout this rite that love is a madman's game. You know, when you fall in love, you lose a bit of your mind there. You know, you kind of float. You're kind of floating, and you're kind of going a bit crazy. You know, when you're really madly in love. So I think he just reflects this throughout this poem, how love can drive you almost into a crazy state, you know, when it's when you're madly fallen into love. And I think he reflected well the all that Midsummer Night's Dream is. And yeah, just an amazing job here by Tomahawk.
Great comment, Naomi. And Pam, how about you, girlfriend?
Yeah, this is great. Wonderful read for the rest. I really like how he decided to write from the perspective of one character, of the mischievous Puck. And I like that he added the humor in here. And he, as Naomi said, he took a look at the idea of how love turns us into such fools. And I did particularly like that third stanza. But I also really liked the ending, you know, where it says, mayhap one fine day they will awaken from their naivety and will carry on in a manner less befitting their lot in life. I holdeth not my breath. You know, I just thought that was a wonderful line in the whole, like there was a biting sarcasm that I really appreciated. And I really like the use of the phrase helter skelter, in search of love dear that fulfills our desires, only find to narrow our boon in reality. I like how that speaks on the whole idea of when it comes to love, there is often a huge gap between our dreams and reality. So just a clever write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Rex, you want to comment next?
As a pointed reflection in the mirror of self, is it matters not the years in which ripped, it matters in that the human floor still remains the same. And this on a note in third stanza, love is the most arcane, profane, and insane of emotions, and aren't we simply puppets in some madman's game? So nothing has changed over the years, and the fact that he wrote it from the point of Puck, and it works with that idea of a Shakespeare thought. Johnson, as Pam said, that helps the sculpture. I like that. And this also sixes and sevens. I, Puck, remain at six and sevens, far be it from I, to discern the human condition and speak as it was ever thus. I go on in this comedy of errors. I might touch through a bit of humor there as well.
Nice comments, guys. I have to say, you know, I like this piece quite a bit. I think that it had a great Shakespearean kind of sound to it. It wasn't like exact, mm-hmm. and it wasn't heavy duty Shakespearean. It was, but it had that complete feel all the way through, the different choices of words, uses of words, but it wasn't overdone. And I think that he it was an excellent prompt take on those prompts, you know, because that last line, Lord, what fools these mortals be. You know, and I think that he really he put it out there and he did it right, you know. It may be a bit modern, you know, set of thoughts, but that's okay because that's the way, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it was wonderful, and I think he really did a great job with it. So, nice job. Nice job. Okay, I didn't skip anybody. That's a plus. Now I have to figure out what I'm doing next. Thought I had it figured out. But we all know how that goes. So I do. Naomi, I have one for you next. From Saucy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Going there, getting there, on my journey there. Okay. By Stelina. Sonnet for True Love. And she wrote, "To love looks not with the eyes, but with the mind, and therefore is winged Cupid painted blind." Okay, and it goes like this. "You cast your seeds, and on the eyes they fall, removing the guise of outer beauty, delving deep the spirit to reveal all, for that fleeting fairness fades too swiftly. In its wake remains a pining sorrow for the soft bloom of youth upon the face, which wanes a little with each tomorrow, and wilting petals wither in its place. Yet when the mind perceives more than the eyes, for flare and poise are lasting attractions, beauty remains constant, and so beguiles, more lingering than a mere flirtation. The truest love we'll see within the heart, for beauty is as eternal as art." End poem.
Nicely done, Naomi. Nicely done. Next, you want to start us off?
Wonderfully done sonnet with the nice turn near the bottom end. Yet, when the mind perceives more than the eyes, for certain points are less than expression. Beauty remains constant and so beguiled, more linear than a mere flirtation. And then that the truest love we'll see within the heart, the beauty is an eternalized art. That notice of what you see outwardly is just a flickering impression. It's what sits within that you have to take as part of the outward package as well. Thereby, the beauty does lie all the way through.
Nice comment, Rex. Nice comment. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this beautifully written sonnet. I like the gentle use of the S and soft C and alliteration. I like, "For the fleeting fairness fades too swiftly, in its wake remains a pining sorrow for the soft bloom of youth upon the face, which wanes a little with each tomorrow." I like that I really enjoy and appreciate how she reminds us that is the beauty of the heart that's eternal, that it's not the beauty of the outward appearance. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Nice comment. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I can't say it better than what Pam just said. She really reflects that importance there, that seeing the inner beauty instead of the outer facade, you know, that fades away with time, and just the true love it dwells in the heart of another person, you know, and not on the artificial appearance, the outer shell, if you want to say it. And I too love that last line, "The truest love we'll see within the heart, for beauty is as eternal as art." I just love that last line, how she finished this off. So a wonderful piece throughout by Stelina. Just amazing.
Right. Absolutely. And I have to agree. I think that this is just an excellent job. And yeah, the inner beauty of it is well stated here. But really nicely done, and a wonderful take on the prompt. I wasn't sure anybody was going to go with that prompt because the way it was, I don't know, when I read it, I was kind of like, what? But it took me a minute, but I caught up with it, so it's all good. But Stelina, you did a wonderful job. I don't know where you're at. You're missing the show. It's not like you. Anyway, great job. and enjoyed very much. And I got to find the room again. Here it is. Yay. And Pam, that brings me to you.
Okie dokie, no. Smokey.
Yes. No, it doesn't. It doesn't bring me to you. Why are you letting
okay.
me do these things?
That works
you
too.
Pam says, whatever you say, Jane, whatever. Whatever. God, why do you feel like you're fighting City Hall tonight? Takes me to Rex. Rex reads after Naomi. Now, Rex, if you don't mind.
A Dagger of the Mind by Patrick Giles. Were but mere shadows or a faint mist of being, inhabiting a time and space, never knowing or seeing, chaotic in one sense, desperately searching to find our agonizing destiny, a dagger of the mind. Riddled in persecution, while tormented by all, our existence in death, like soaring to the fall, such negative energy is killing to be kind, mortal man, fallacy, a dagger of the mind. All is but nothing, emptiness is but full, eyes that see nothing, windows to the soul, miracle of evolution, fate to mankind, soul of an animal, a dagger of the mind. To understand is to be understood, ignorance to be ignorant, consumed by the music while lost in the dance, traveling one direction, ahead soon becomes behind, a lingering malignancy, a dagger of the mind. And fun.
Nice job. Nice read, right? Pam, that brings me to you.
Yeah, great read there, Rex. I really like how, well, the general theme I get from this is the idea that those who are ignorant, those who are arrogant, those who choose not to think for themselves will never truly understand a sharp mind. They will never truly understand a sharp wit. It is beyond them. I do like the repetitiveness of a dagger of the mind between each stanza. I like riddled in persecution while tormented by all our existence and death, like soaring to the fall. Such negative energy is killing to the kind, mortal man's fallacy. I like how that stanza speaks on the whole idea of mankind not believing in such magical things as fairies. So it works well with the topic. But I also feel like it works well for the whole idea that there is a certain ignorance, you know, even nowadays towards people that we don't necessarily understand because they're not like us, you know. And so I really just thought this was a very thoughtful and intelligent write, beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, I do agree. Nice comment, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I was thinking something just, you know, more... open, you know, but Pam, what you just said, yeah, it really made me see further into the poem, I think, read more into it. And I can see that interpretation throughout the lines there, a dagger of the mind, which is the quick wit, wittiness of some people that others lack there. I just saw it as at first I was seeing a dagger of the mind as being the craziness and the chaoticness of life itself and everything that was around it. But I think I was not zooming into the real message here. But bravo to Rex for this, because it was kind of like, especially in that last stanza, amazingly written. It was like kind of a tongue twister there. I just love that last stanza. To understand is to be understood, and ignorant to be to the ignorance. And And I loved consumed by the music while lost in the dance. That's amazing, that line there. So just a great write by Patrick Childs here, so well written. And like Pam said, such an intelligent writer, witty and clever.
Nice comment, Naomi. And Rex, how about you?
I'm going to go with, oh, the tempest wrought from one to another as we seek our space and time. It's on where it was, is killing to be kind, mortal man's fallacy. Again, there. Eyes that see nothing, windows to the soul. Ahead soon becomes behind, a lingering malignancy, a dagger of the mind. There is that noted thought that we spend so much time on this, that, and the other thing, that we keep forgetting history. Therefore, it repeats itself, and we find ourselves once more beleaguered, one against another.
Nice. Nice comment, Rob. I actually thought it was a very well-paced piece. I loved the flow of it, and I thought it was a great take on the chosen prompt. So great job, Patrick, and I did enjoy it very much. And thanks for entering the contest. Absolutely. So, on that note, Pam, I'm coming to you.
And it's me for sure this time, huh?
Darn.
He's such a wise guy.
All right.
I know. It's so much fun. All right. This is Diamond in the Rough by Victoria Frost. And it goes like this. I feel the rage brimming at my lips, threatening to boil, bubbling over, spilling out from the vessel that contains them, unleashing their heat upon the tender flesh of skin that dares to come too close, thinking the foreshadowing steam is just for show. I feel the heat behind my hardened face, lips pursed closed, the final attempt at restraint, composure, before spilling forth this anger that consumes my thoughts, devours my patience, hungry to fuel the flames, burn a little brighter. It's not here for your comfort. My smile gleams not because of joy, but because it has been polished by the pressure, the compounding weight of depression, saved by the sword of my anger as I protect this helpless child shielded in my heart. She is the diamond I have grown behind this facade of social politeness, beautiful, glimmering, dazzling, in all her right, but diamonds cut too, and comb.
Great job. Great job. Okay, Naomi, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I just love how she finished this, you know, with the diamond. She is a diamond I have grown, that inner self that that she's fighting so much to protect and to shield from all, you know. But she finishes with dazzling in all her right, but diamonds cut too. So, you know, she can be, watch out, because she can be the you know, like the prompt says, she can be fierce and she can be cutting and she can be, even though she is fragile and in some ways, she can be all very mighty when she wants. So just amazing, right, to that prompt by Victoria Frost there. So many beautiful lines along these stanzas. It's just raw emotion here, you know, that's just so cleverly sketched out here. You feel it. You feel the emotion through this piece. It's just wonderful.
Excellent comment. Rex, how about you?
Yes. Beware the vain simmering beneath this mask, for the slings and arrows that thou hast cast know not the wrath that you shall endure. That is the underlying weight.
True, true.
Nice. Well, didn't I say enough?
We were waiting there.
End comments.
End comments.
But that sounds so rude.
Too funny. Well, you know.
No, it does go that thought. Hey, you might get your shit in now, but you know what? At the end of the day, I'm going to slice you to bloody ribbons.
Yeah, it's kind of like, but completely opposite of he who laughs last, laughs best, you know,
right.
Pretty much. Yeah, same, yeah.
You might like the cut, but you won't like the end result.
Absolutely. I'm listening to this, right, as Pam is reading it, and all I can picture is one of Victoria's girls with a sword in her hand, wielding it. You know, I don't quite know why, but that's what I was getting in my image, and I'm going, yep, you know, though she be little, she be fierce. Yeah, so it was an excellent, excellent job, Victoria, and I really thought that it was an awesome take on that chosen prompt, and, you know, I did love that line, she is the diamond I have grown behind this facade of social politeness, beautiful, glimmering, dazzling in all her right. But diamonds cut too. Absolutely. It's just an excellent take on that prompt. Okay. Let me figure out what I'm going to do now. Pam read that. That means that it is, I guess it's my turn. Oh, okay. Read that poem though. Now I think I've got it. By George, I think I've got it. Okay. And this one is by Flowers. It's called Hidden Words. I but a shadow under a hunter's moon do sweep in between silver moonbeams and straddle your pleasant feet beneath the flora of that fluorescent sphere. Think not of me in an off-offending style, for love is pure and must secure a way as lips wake to your unspoken kiss. Where dreams are but the glory of the day. I speak to gather time and place where you can find within yourself a sacred space where we might fall and in and out love and then return. So scorn me not, 'tis I that bid you stay, and hidden from other shadows in these dreams will copulate each thought that we hold in our grace. A discipline of truth under sweet heaven's gate, and wake within the great early morn in the laughter of a smiling face. I tell you, someday I'll make these things large enough. End poem. Yes, yes, yes. Excellent. Come on, I forget where I left off. Naomi, do you want to kick us off on this one?
Yeah, I love this. I love the way she uses, you know, the hunt starts off, I but a shadow under a hunter's moon to sweep in between silver moonbeams and straddle your pleasant feet beneath the flora of that fluorescent sphere. You know, I love the thought I got out of this is, and especially from the lines, in and out of love and then return, where we might fall in and out of love and then return. When you're in a relationship, I don't think you're all, you love the other person, but loving another person and being in love with another person, like completely in love, I find it's two different things. And, you know, you can love the other person that you're with, but in a long-term relationship, well, for me, for my part, is that I'm not always in love completely. Like, I fall in and out of love, you know, along the way. Maybe that's just me. That's weird. But that's what I got out of this. Like, you love the other person, but you're not always, like, you don't always feel that great, big passion of being in love with them. I don't know. I just got that out of this poem. You know, I thought this was amazingly well written. And, you know, it has like this kind of darkness to it, I think, beautiful darkness to it. I don't know. I felt that kind of, you know, in it throughout it. So just a beautiful write, amazing. It just triggered my creative juices there just to dig. I'm waiting to see what Pam and Rex have to say about this. Maybe I'm completely off route here in this interpretation, but that's what I got out of it.
I just want everyone to notice, okay, she's not worried about what I say. She don't worry about Pam and Rex. See, I
oh,
that.
Well, you said...
No. We're past that now. We're all past that now. You can't take it back now. Let's try now. I don't blame you there, Naomi. I don't blame you because, you know...
That was so unintentional.
Oh my god. Okay, Rex, go ahead and show me some insight on this, will you?
Now, I can go along with Naomi's thoughts, but I'm going to look at it a little differently. I think this talks of the unsettling conflict within. It hits on that note of Hunter's Moon, so there's that note of sleep. You sweep in between silver moonbeams, which elicits that thought of dreaming, and staddle your pleasant feet, support your pleasant feet beneath the floor of that fluorescent sphere. So that there's that notation of wanting to give support in the moment. Think not of me in an offending style. For love is pure and must secure a way. As lips awaken to your unspoken kiss, where dreams are not but are but the glory of the day. So there's that notion of the mind coming together in the moment where there's some kind of conflict, some opposite in the mind itself that the dream is working out. And I thought that where we might fall in and out of love and then return is that nice clever. We still have those conflicting emotions where we argue with ourselves, nah, you're wrong on that note. That sucks. All those little tidbits, the argument of self. And that thought, so scorn me not. I like that. 'Tis I that bid you stay. We'll copulate each thought that we hold in our grace, a discipline of truth under sweet heaven's gate. So there's that notice in the dream that you, within that marriage of mentality, the copulation of the thought is mutual. It comes across as a blending of reality and surreality in the moment. And within that dream being worked out, you wake up with a smile on face the next day because everything sits in a more pleasant viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Very well said, Rex.
Okay. Now, Pam, I would like you to help nail me out.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I think we only need to worry about what Rex and Naomi thought. But,
well, Pam, I want to know what you think.
All right. Well, here's what I'm going to do is I really like what both Rex and Naomi had to say. I thought there was just absolutely valid points. But just to be different and just to have a third thought, even though I'm probably wrong, I'm going to go with something different. I'm going to say that this is personification of the passing of time, of the rising and setting of the sun and the moon, and how the time period between dreams and waking hours is oftentimes so fleeting. And, you know, I see that within, I speak to gather time and place and think not of me in an offending style. And I realize that could be, you know, honestly, there's a lot of people that I think about in an offending style. So I could easily see that being attributed to a person. But I think so oftentimes we look at the brief lasting of the sun of daytime or the brief lasting of nighttime, depending on which we like more, in a way that's offending because it never suits necessarily our sensibilities. I just think this is a beautiful and thoughtful rite all the way through and wonderful imagery and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Jill, what do you think of it?
Well, not that it matters, but... I thought that this was a great rite. I love the imagery throughout, and the sound of the words just rolled off my ears softly, and I liked that. I thought it was wonderful. I totally loved the design. "'Tis for me not, 'tis I that you stay, and hidden from other shadows in these dreams, we copulate each thought that we hold in our grace, a discipline of truth under sweet heaven's gate, and wake mm-hmm. within the gratefully morn in the laughter of a smiling face." I thought it was just an excellent take on the prompt, because the prompt was, if we shadows have offended, think about this, and all is mended, that you have but slumbered here while we vision here. And I think that it was just a great take on the prompt, and very well done. So thank you, Flower Muse, for writing for the contest. Excellent job. Okay. Let me see now. Now I'm at the home. I wrote that one. I did. So, okay. That means that it's Naomi's read. Oh, well. Yes. And then I'm going to run off some of these audios. Okay, here we go. Okay, Naomi, I got one for you.
D'accord. Trust shills. Trust the process. Oh, my gracious. Okay. Yeah, do you ever have one for me? Okay, trust the process. Truth, reason, and love are a trio that people today rarely reach for. It involves so much more than honesty, premise, and emotion. Truth is a quality that is not perceptual. It's an actuality, a matter of fact that is indisputable. It is a principle. Reason requires rationality, not fanatical feelings. It is the ability to think, understand, and form judgment based on logical thinking. Love is intense and deep. It has nothing to do with infatuation or fleeting, unreliable emotion. It is born from passion and devotion. Do you ever wonder if what you have is real? Ask yourself, can I be with this person without changing or altering his perception? Do I accept him as is? No ulterior motive to fix him later? Do I condition my love? In other words, do you love him when all is well, but at the first sign of distress, you're ready to tuck tail and bail? Do you keep score so at the end of the day, you will separate the mine from yours? It is so hard when you have been scarred to see anyone's way but yours, because you've given so much before just to be set aside and ignored. Not knowing how to validate your own worth, you trust in mankind to do what only you know how to do. The new norm is severely broken. We went from one extreme to the other, finding ourselves infatuated with the word love or the idea of someone wanting and needing you and only you. We make the biggest mistake by setting them on a pedestal. Then what happens then when our human nature pops up and they don't put you first? Domestic violence, physical and mental abuse, these are only a few that will ensue, not to mention the bruises inside that are well hidden under a trigger and all that old feelings rush in and destroy what could have been. This is a cycle that most of the world is stuck in. So I implore you to seek after truth, reason, and love, and change will come. Trust the process and fall in love with you. End poem.
You're muted.
You're on mute, Bill.
Great read, Naomi. Sorry, there was a lot there, but you did a great job with it. So, well done. Okay, Rex, that brings me to you since I'm off mute now.
Hey, you got 90 minutes in this time. Aha.
I did. I'm amazed.
A new record. I'm going to hit with that tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Truth, reason, and love, that trio that people really reach for today, is actually quite the thought, truth and reason. Nothing is ever born on truth and reason these days. There's always some hidden agenda and always some underlying emotional task that sets one off, whether it be for real or just a perception of hurt, so to speak. And the thought coming in the back end, she comes back to truth, reason, love again, and change will come. Trust the process and fall in love with you. The idea being that if you speak the truth, you offer proper thought processes and logic in the reasoning, then everything else will fall in place because you're trusting yourself in the first place instead of someone else.
Mm-hmm. Great comment, Rex. Great comment. Pam, how about you, hon?
I thought this was just a wonderful introspective write, but also a write that really gives wisdom to everybody that I think it's relatable. And the whole idea of how oftentimes we have misunderstandings about what love is, and I like that she mentions that it is nothing to do with this infatuation, is born from passion and devotion. And I also like that oftentimes your perceptions can be altered. And that the new norm is severely broken. We went from one extreme to the other, finding ourselves infatuated with the word love or the idea of someone writing and meeting you. That was a wonderful idea. And then so was the whole idea of oftentimes we fall in love with somebody, or we don't necessarily fall in love with them, but we see the opportunity, as she mentions, the ulterior motive to fix him later, you know, and do we put that condition on love that we see somebody and, you know, we think later, you know, we'll start the relationship and later we'll fix them. I also like that near the end, she delves into the area of domestic abuse and violence and those things that are not of love and need to be walked away from. So just a powerful, thoughtful write and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
I believe that what Pam said has a, you know, you often want to fix somebody after sometimes you're just blinded by love and you don't see all those things that later pop up and you want to fix. when she says what happens when our human nature pops up and they don't put you first. And then right after she says, domestic violence, physical and mental abuse. I'm kind of like not, because I went through it, so I don't see really all what she meant there, but the interpretation of that. But overall, this right, she goes in depth of questioning, love versus the logical, I think, that you lose all logical thinking, and that's true sometimes when you do fall in love, you lose that logical thinking. And, afterwards, sometimes when you go through all the what is bad, what she states, domestic violence and physical and mental abuse and all that, you say, well, what was I thinking, to fall in love with this person that could hurt me so much, where was my rationality? Where was my good sense? My perceptions were so wilted and so out of touch, So I think she really touched on something very, very profound in this rite. So bravo.
Nice comments, everybody. I have to say that I think that Truth piece was very, very modern day, okay? But the prompt that she chose is a quote, and it says, and yet to say the truth, reason and love keep little company together nowadays. And I think she really nailed that when you look at the piece, very modern day circumstance, but it just really runs together with that prompt. So nice job, Truth, and thanks for entering the contest and great piece. Absolutely. Okay. So okie dokie. Naomi read that. Yes, she did.
Yes, I did.
What's that? I'm hearing things. Must be Pam whispering in the background. Rex, I put this one up for you, and then we're going to work down the list.
All right. Through the Great Divide by Daniel Duhaime. Through the shades of tomorrow, laden with white calendar flowers of Eden, lies silent. Rose-colored dew becomes transparent where green meadows grow. Harmonious sunshine lights the fire of delights. Daydream shadows fall like an aperture of the moon, silhouetted upon the cold, dark ground, revealing itself to be alive. Dancing gods reveal themselves in a display of forts. Lightning flows from skyward in an arc like a bending highway to the stars. Ending and poem.
Nice read, Rex. Nice read. Okay. And Pam, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I thought this was a beautiful mystical rite, Through the Great Divide. I like how that title speaks on the idea of going past the veil that, hangs between the human world and the fairy world. I really particularly like harmonious sunshine lights the fire of delight, daydream shadows fall like an aperture of the moon silhouetted upon the cold, dark ground. I like that he brings in something visual like the sunlight and the moon and adds elements of music such as harmonious and aperture to each one. So I just thought this was absolutely beautiful and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I love those lines that Pam, stated, but also the last stanza really got me. Dancing gods reveal themselves in a display of force. And then the light, you know, how he says the lightning flows from skyward in an arc, like a bending highway to the stars. I just love that, a bending highway to the stars. This is so beautiful, so rich with amazing imagery. And, you know, the flow and just the overall feeling of the whole piece is just beautiful. Just love this, right? Bravo, Danielle.
Absolutely. And Lex, how about you?
Through the Great Divide. So I'm going to go with passing beyond that veil between sleep and deep sleep, that venue that you walk into through the shades of tomorrow, laden with white calliander, flowers of Eden, lie silent. There's that note of quietness in the moment. Then everything becomes alive. Rose-colored dew becomes transparent, where green meadows grow. Harmonious sunshine lights the fire of delights. Then there's the passage. The daydream shadows fall like an aperture of the moon. That hits on the notion of falling into deep sleep. And then the last hits on that notion of where all things are possible. Everything comes alive in the moment. Spiritually, magically, and it is like that skyward arc of lightning from earth to ground. One follows oneself to the stars themselves.
Absolutely. Great job. Great comments. Pam, what do you have to say? Or did I start with you?
She's
mutating. Maybe.
Yeah, that is. She put the phone down.
Are you talking to me?
I sure was.
Didn't I already comment? I was the first one to comment on this. When
I said that, too, and then I got lost because nobody answered me. Okay. Well, in that case, I guess it's my turn.
Jean's double dipping.
That's usually the way it works, you know, when nobody else is doing anything, it's usually my turn. I'm just being, I'm out of the loop. It was, you know, I thought it was wonderful imagery, Daniel. You know, you definitely carried this, or set the stage, you know, for starting out with the beauty of the flowers and what have you. And then you talk briefly about the dancing gods, you know, and then the lightning rolling in and in the bending the highway to the stars. I thought that it kind of was an elongated image in my mind where, you know, I went from this thing and this, it was like that panoramic view thing again. It really was. Because I watched the whole thing unfold in front of me. You know, maybe it was a moving picture. I'm not sure. But I have to say, I really liked the piece. So thank you so much for
thank
that.
Thank you so much for that.
God, now I'm hearing myself. Oh, Lord have mercy. Okay, I'll put up the next piece by Poetic Picasso, and I have a sound card for that, so let me play that one, and here we go.
Hast thou not seen the guise of the lovers of the moonlight? How we glow with the radiance of an alabaster hue of midnight. Whence the winds blow a soothing cadence of our gentle whisper. Our footsteps seem treading lightly over dry leaves that became crisper. Her natural beauty is the evoked incarnation of a goddess of purity, existing within the gloom of the dull shade of the forsaken obscurity. My loyal reverence is the honorable display of my chivalrous devotion, revealing the spirit of the divinity of my humble heart, exuding emotion. Ironic eyes are the romantic sparkle of a transient glimpse of the morrow. My brush and caresses are the touch of a clover, removing yester's sorrow. We dwell secretly amidst the mystic realm of the forest of love forever. Our love is the sign of the coming of a blissful spring. we enjoy together. Twain silhouettes shine in the virgin reflection of the currents of the pond, above the dewdrops of the moisture dropped upon the lonely wilting frond, in the graceful hands of a figure of my lover, pluck nascent petals of flowers, awakened by the petrica from the sweet blessing of the morning showers. If we shuttles have offended, think but this, and all is mended, that thou hast but slumbered here, whilst these visions did appear. Then witness the presence of love, for thou shalt know of us thereof. Under the darkness of our covers, we sleep as the shadows of lovers. Oh, to thee that I fairly revere, be the nectar that shall endear.
Wonderful piece, Mike. Wonderful piece. Pam, do you want to start us off on this?
In the poem.
I would be happy to. First of all, wonderful SoundCloud there. Great reading. I liked his choice of background music. I really like, of course, as always, his use of imagery.
Are we glowing with the radiance?
Oh, is it still going?
No, it started over.
Repeat.
Oh, I was like, I couldn't swear she called on me to comment.
I did. Oh, hard to get good help these days. What can I say to you?
Well, wonderful imagery. I like how it has a dark and haunting tone, and yet there's a certain romanticism to it. Her onyx eyes are the romantic sparkle of a transient glimpse of the morrow. My brush and caress are the touch of a clover moving yester's sorrow. A really nice flow to it. Really nice. I like clover as in the idea of the four-leaf clover, but also it brings to mind the cloven hoof of the satyr chasing after the nymphs. So really just a wonderful Shakespearean feel to it, beautifully written and very well done.
Okay, now that I've finished Frank and Pam, Naomi, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I thought this was marvelously well written. You know, it's so romantic, but you know, it has that. Well, like in that the title, "Shadows of Lovers," it has like that dark little bit of darkness that Pam mentioned there throughout. It's like a veiled kind of love, you know, behind the shadows there going on. I don't know how to quite describe it, but it is deeply romantic. It has wonderful imagery throughout. Just a wonderfully written piece here by Frank. Enjoyed it, you know, every stanza.
Oh, my gosh. Great comment, Naomi. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at the ghost of Frank in here. Oh, my God. Oh, and Rex, how about you?
The cadence of those illuminating shadows that gives birth to the scenery and that which evolves beneath their caress, their embalming arena, the thought with the pond, again, that part of the cadence of the shadows, the palm fronds, the dewdrops, all of that little touches of magic that actually are part of the background. But here they are the foreground, with the two lovers being cajoled to remember, this is what this is all about and how we invoke the night. Mm-hmm. And it's one of this, I'd say this is probably the best piece I've I've heard from Frank.
Awesome comment there.
Comment from Lex. Very well done. And Pam, how about you? Oh, you went first. I caught it myself. You and Frank were talking at the same time. My bad. Oh, my God. I'm telling you, it's hard to get good help these days. Frank, I think this is beautiful, right? I don't even know why we're commenting on Frank's face. He didn't even show his face in the room tonight. Did anyone notice that? I noticed that. Anyway, I'm just kidding, Frank. But it was a beautiful piece. Wonderful imagery, and the story told was great. And I really enjoyed the audio and the words that were written. So great job, Frank. And, I don't know. If I picked one stanza, I'd have to pick another stanza and another stanza. And, again, another stanza. So I don't want to do that because I could read the whole poem and that would be kind of not fun for everyone else. Okay, so great stuff. And, Pam, I need you to read the next one.
Okie dokie, Smokey.
Okie dokie.
Ah, okay. This is Indentured Visions of Moonlit Pools, and it goes like this. Sleeping soundly beneath the ancient oak, with the chiming of midnight in her ear, the forest fairies lay a velvet cloak of fading reveries that reappear. The lady has such hope within her heart, lips impart sweet lingerings of a sigh. Immortal incantations play their part as ravened reflection doth swiftly fly. She's longing for the love she hopes to find, for 'tis those arms which bear the souls of fools beyond the ordinary and its kind to sweetest dreams displayed in moonlit pools. And so, dear folks, we see ourselves as wise till we see self with love's indentured eyes. And poem.
Oh, nice job, Pam. Naomi, you want to start us off?
Oh, yeah, I love this. Yeah, this is so beautifully written. I mean, it has that old, this sonnet has this, the old Shakespearean kind of language, but without being heavy. We can still understand it. Some of the Shakespearean, I remember back in class, the teacher had to explain most of it, but this is just, beautifully written. I just love the way it flows and the rhyme and everything. It seems so effortlessly, but I suppose that this took an awful amount of time and work, just a wonderful, wonderful right here. It's just an amazing piece here, Pam. Just delightful piece here.
Thank you, Naomi.
Nice comment, Naomi. And Rex, how about you?
It is a well-done sonnet, and there's a touch of sadness in it, too, because of the thought with indentured. Oh, what fool am I that knowest not my own wishes before I die, which kind of hits on that last note. Till we see self with love's indentured eyes, it kind of hits on that. There's a sad note to that ending.
Is that it, Rex? Is that end comment?
Yes, end comment. you realize you're going to have to do that one day.
I have to make sure that you have time to breathe. I don't want to just assume you're done. Pam, I thought this was a wonderful write, just really well written. I assume the image is one of the prompts. I couldn't check the contest because you didn't enter. Go figure. I guess that's because you're helping me to, you know what I mean, to do the contest.
Oh, yeah.
So I wish I could, pinpoint what the other was, but I think that you did a really wonderful job. And I have to agree with Rex that I find that there's a sadness to it because of the lines throughout. And I think that Yeah. Yeah. What he said.
Kind of hits on that note to dream the impossible dream.
Yeah.
You want me to sing?
Yeah.
I better not sing anything.
Well,
I won't
thank you, Phil, and thank you, everyone.
You're welcome, honey. It was good to hear you read your piece. Now, I have another one, and I have to go there and put it up, and I have a SoundCloud for this. So everybody, put the Velcro on your chair. Here we go.
All right, pipe down, ye rabble rousers, for the play doth begin. Good evening, fair ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our theater in the round, as tonight we present to thee A Midsummer Night's Madness. Now, sit back whilst we tell thee a tale most robust, and deliver thee unto worlds where all doth combust. Merodach's mysterious midsummer bender rose this veil's incantational spirit. Sprites, imps, and fairies ate the sheep tender, dipping deep within his forest privet. Hark! Who goes there in shadow's very clutch? This bystander's frock doth sway and canter, and those baubles reveal an unbelted stut, that bear cat a roar in ribald banter. Quit pucking around, wee one, and do as I bid. Yes, my lord. Listen, sire. He doth dreameth so. O mine, Nacroth, thine thistle, tis moist moonlight. Let it be imprinted with kisses most mad, that glaze thine eyes with tongues humming bare flight, in singing songs of thy bounty to be had. Phew! That queef didst lay a bold impression, and thy lips be stung of such a redded hue. Hast thou been done a sausage ingestion, for thee hath revealed a raspberry slew? Shrink not from me, purple magic muffin, on each month's new fourth a firework display, as all is much ado about nothing, and do me corset for night turns today. Ripe on me berries glistening in beans pose, a cool breeze rousing their freedom most barret. I want to feel calligraphy's tongue to prose, writ cross these mounts as to mouth ye insert. Well, that is more what this eve I seek, your bagpipes begging for a hearty blow. 'Tis frocking music, so let's have a peek, and dance in these fairies' enchanting glow. Fare thee well, all ye ladies and gents. He beest youish in midsummer's dream. Oberon sets the table, your mind he rents, and Puck be the forest laughing whilst he preen. Hail to the patrons of the globe this night. We bow to your music with much delight. And please, my fellow revelers, join us on the morrow, to which once again ye shall hear more of this kiss and tell us. Bon oui, mes amis. Bon oui.
Madness, I say, madness.
Oh, my gosh. Rex, that was wonderful. And Pam, do you want to start us off?
Oh, I would be happy to. Rex, that was just absolutely a brilliant performance. I loved how you opened us up to introduce us to the all right, pipe down ye rabble rousers where the play doth begin. And all the way through, wonderful background music, wonderful voice acting. I really liked how you threw in that Shakespearean humor into this. You know, and with lines like "Hark, who goes there in shadows, very clutch this bystander's frost of sway and canter," and those baubles reveal an undelted touch. You know, I just all the way through, "Shrink not from me, purple magic muffin, on each month's fourth a firework display, as all is much ado about nothing." I thought that was just really clever that you threw in you have the Shakespeare language, but then you have language like words like nothing, like it's so casually thrown in there to create and I want to say modern day feel, but to create the whole feeling of a more laid back situation. And I do think there is something that stinks in this poem, but... you know, I just really enjoy this all the way through. It made me laugh, it made me smile, and it was a delight to listen to.
Thank you, Pam.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was wonderful, Rex. And Naomi, how about you?
Oh, yeah. This was just a way an awesome way to end the evening. Like a spree of wild madness here, yeah. But so cleverly and you know, put together, and so much wit and intelligence throughout this whole piece here. But you know, just a delight. You know, the way you staged the whole thing with the music. And the language you use and your reference to so many things, you know, in Shakespeare, a Much Ado, and a Much Ado About Nothing, and, you know, all throughout, just a formidable way to say, bonne nuit, mes amis, bonne nuit.
Thank you, Naomi.
Well, Rex, I thought this was absolutely wonderful. It was creative and so well put together. The great imagery and thoughts throughout, and I thought the audio, well, that was just entertaining and just well done. So it was very enjoyable. It was fun. It gave you a laugh. Like Pam said, you know, some of the words sounded Shakespeare, some of them didn't. But, you know, it made it eclectic. It made it work is really what it made it do. But you definitely followed the thoughts of the prompts and the contest, and I think that in itself, you know, says a lot. Thank you guys for joining us or joining me tonight. Well, actually, Rex, thank you for joining us tonight. It's 3-1 tonight. And yeah, you know, go figure. It was just a fun night and a lot of good poetry. I had 1, 2, 3, 4. I had 5 carryovers. And if anybody's listening tomorrow to the archive, one is Where Then, next one is Garden Delights. I have Manya, I have K Heartless, and I have Incubus. I'm going to put those all on Friday's show, so Friday could be
cool.
Very busy.
So we get a little bit more Midsummer Madness.
Yeah, exactly. And then God knows what I'll have left tomorrow night, so you might have this. It could be a crazy Friday, but that's okay.
Ooh.
I know. It gets that way sometimes. But, so I want to thank everybody, and I want to thank everyone who wrote for the contest and gave us this wonderful material to use tonight. It was fun. And Pam, as always, thanks for running the phones for me. Naomi, it was great having you here. It's good to have three crazy twisted sisters and a twisted mister. I won't mention any names on that. Yeah, that's tonight. It's a twisted mister. Oh my God! But anyway, excellent poetry, everybody.
And, yeah, awesome show.
Yes,
and that y'all have
sweet tis the night when the moon does glow, but sorely, tis the end of the show.
Yep.
And that's the time we all must go. Okay. Word. Anyway, thank you, everybody. Pam, you have a good night. Naomi, have a good night. Rex, have a good night. And I'm getting the hell out of here.
And all right. Good night, all. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Y'all take care. I'll see you tomorrow.